Welcome to the Brian D. O'Leary Show. This is your home for serious content amidst an unserious world. Welcome back to the Brian D. O'Leary Show. Good to have you back. Good to be back. It's been a while, a little over a month, I think, since I've been on the airwaves. A lot of things have happened in the meantime, but summer is one of those things. I'm trying to get a consistent schedule, and finally today, peeled off a little bit of time to do this show. So I've been reimagining what this show is, what it will be, and so forth. And I'll leak a little of that out over the next several shows, I would imagine. Not a whole lot of change, just kind of more of a change in my philosophy and what I'm doing and why I'm doing the show. I mean, this Brian D. O'Leary Show was a way for me just to get out my thoughts and get them out fairly easily in lieu of email or in conjunction with emails. And I would say that it's part of the program. Just go to briandoleary.com, sign up for the email list. It's part of the program. You get both. And usually what happens is I'll email a little heavier when I'm not podcasting and vice versa. So that's what's been happening. If you're not on the list, that's where I've been. I've been on the email. So just get on the email list. And it's been easier. I've been on a couple shows and talked to a few other folks about it, but it's just been easier when I have the time to bang out a few emails here and there as opposed to sitting down for a half hour or whatever to do the show. I can do emails a minute at a time, 5 minutes at a time, eventually get completed. Really hard to do that with podcasting unless I've got a couple blocks scheduled out. And that might happen in this case. I've got an outline of what I want to talk about today. First being relating to an email I wrote earlier today. Actually, as I record this, it probably hasn't gone out, or I know it hasn't gone out, but by the time you hear it, it probably will go out. Point being is that it had a lot to do with inflation and prices of everything going up. And well, what went viral, I didn't mention it in the email, I'll mention it now, went viral last week, I believe it was, a fellow by the name of Oliver Anthony, Richmond, North of Richmond song went viral all of a sudden and got a lot of people thinking. And I hear a lot online or read a lot online. You know, some folks are like, they don't like the song, they hate country music. Well, if you've been around me long enough, I love country music for the most part. And that's not really the point. The point is the sentiment of the song. But that being said, we don't talk about a whole lot in, I guess, public terms is the impact of inflation on our lives. And really what I mean by inflation is the increase in the money supply. That used to be the old definition of inflation. Now it is a price level, really, of a basket of goods, goods and services. And the academics and the government agencies and whoever is government agencies calculating it, but the basket of goods changes. So we're not comparing apples to apples on inflation. You could say the same thing about the Dow Jones Industrial Average to some degree. You know, they have to make some calls there if a company is no longer viable to the extent of that their stock price is indicative of the economy at large, which we look at the Dow Jones average as a measure of the economy. Well, I mean, there's a lot to that, but not my point. But I was listening to a podcast today, a little bit after I wrote the email, I was getting ready to send it out. I'm like, oh man, he's actually talking about the same thing I did. Relatively similar, and it was the Brian McClanahan show, which I try to listen to most every show. I'm behind on a few, but I did listen to the latest episode today, and he talked a lot about inflation and its impacts. And if I can put a link in the show notes to that show, because it's a great show, and he podcasts 4 times a week usually for about a half hour, just kind of like what my goal is. But anyway, so you know, I was thinking about it, and I was like, man, I'm not going to send this email out. But after sitting down and thinking about, you know, the show today and what the show's all about and all that stuff, I'm like, well, it's okay if I don't have original ideas. And I've been doing this thing over the last month or so, write down 10 ideas per day. And, you know, granted, most of the ideas stink, but they're ideas. They get me thinking. And really what this exercise has done has really got me thinking about a lot about the show and what I want to do with it, because I don't want to abandon it by any means. Kind of felt like I did, but a lot of things came up in July. Anyway, it's just one of those things that just I didn't really couldn't scratch out the time or couldn't figure it out. Now I think I figured it out a little more, hopefully, so you'll be hearing me more if that's what you want to do. But I guess the point of this idea exercise, just writing down 10 ideas a day, commenting a little about them, not much. I just have an Excel sheet. Sometimes I write them on my note cards if I don't have my computer in front of me and just transfer it to my Excel sheet. I have the date I came up with this genius idea. I have the idea itself, usually about 5 words, nothing more than that, a few comments on it, another section with more comments or a website link or something like that. And then I have a column for action items that I've taken on this idea. A lot of these ideas I've just grayed out on the spreadsheet or some. I haven't quite figured out the system, but just like I don't really want to come back to this idea. But for instance, I was telling another fellow this the other day, and it made me sound silly to a lot of folks, but something I had actually been thinking about, never wrote it down. I'd probably been thinking, definitely, you know, thought about it since I was in high school. So probably for close to 30 years, I've had this on my mind. It's like, why not have an amateur level indoor football league? Because there's a lot of players out there, a lot of kids that like to play football. And frankly, in football, you get 9 games a season. And if you're lucky, you make the playoffs and go 1 game at a time. If you lose, you're out. And in college, you know, you got the same thing. You got now in college, you got like 12, 13, 14, maybe more games, bowl game, whatever. Everybody seems to qualify for a bowl game these days, but wasn't the way it used to be. And you got spring practice, which goes on for a couple weeks in the spring for these teams, and they play their own players and run their own offense and defense and this, that, and the other. And then the spring game usually isn't really a game. It's a controlled scrimmage of some sort. So why not just have a different game? My point, have a different game. And it's similar to the summer leagues in baseball. I don't know how it would work in college for college football, but for players that want to play and develop their skills football wise, rather than playing the 7-on-7 stuff, no, because the linemen don't really get to practice a whole lot in outside of team drills and in games. Skill position players, throwers and runners and receivers of the ball, they get to practice their skills, and that's one of the reasons why the skill level is so high. There's a lot of these 7-on-7 non-contact stuff, touch football, flag football type thing. Anyway, why not real tackle football indoors at the amateur level? Get people going. I don't know exactly how you do it. You need big arenas. So it's a little bit more than a half-baked idea, but I think it could work. So if anybody out there wants to back me up on that, I'm easily findable. And maybe we can make this work, because the Arena Football League is coming back, I think, next year or in the springtime. We'll see how it goes. There's several indoor football leagues, professional or semi-pro, out there. And rules are a little different. And I like the arena game myself. With they patented the nets off the side of the uprights, so you can play it off the net if you miss the kick. I like that idea. I think they patented or something. So the other leagues have more or less the same rules, but they can't use that rule. Anyway, my point being is that get all this under one tent, pro, amateur. I don't even care. Maybe you have pro arena football league players, just like you could have pro baseball players that could play college football but be a pro baseball player. I don't know. So, like I said, I'm fairly easily findable. Just reply to the podcast or the emails or whatever. You can usually get me there. But anyway, talking about football, we got football season coming up, and of course, got Hard Knocks. I watched a little bit of the first Hard Knocks. Haven't got through the whole first episode or the second. Always like that show this time of year. Gets me ready for the NFL, even though I'm less and less interested in all that stuff every year, seems like, over the last 3-4 seasons anyway, for good reason. But anyway, so that gets me going. And now all pro and college football. They're in a fall camp, which is, it's not fall, but it's horrible summer weather in most places. But what we also had right before this all went down, returning to practice and stuff, the Pac-12. If I call it the Pac-10, forgive me, because that's how I grew up. But the Pac-12 blew up. And I wanted to podcast about it when it happened, but I was kind of waiting for things to fall out and see what did indeed happen. Then everybody seemed to have their own take on it. And so I've been kind of laying low on this whole thing. I certainly have my ideas on, you know, the Pac-12 now down to what looks like going to be four teams next year, probably not even a conference. Stanford, Cal, Oregon State, and Washington State are looking for homes, perhaps, in another conference. Maybe they go independent for a while. Who knows? Not that concerned about it, frankly, that part of it. I think it's silly that the core of the Pac-8 or Pac-10 or Pac-12 or whatever you might want to call it, has been destroyed. Started with UCLA and USC agreeing to go to the Big Ten, and now Oregon and Washington have since followed. And it's silly on many levels. One being that football drives the whole entire thing. And my first kind of point to all this is that there should probably be just football conferences and leave the rest of the conference stuff to themselves and whatever they do, and leave football out of it as far as conference formations. It worked in the past. I mean, I remember, back in the day, there were several independent football teams, Boston College, my alma mater, being one of them. But they were in conferences for all their other sports, not always the same conferences. Florida State was the same way. They were an independent in football, and they were in the Metro Conference, and then eventually in the ACC. I think when they went to the ACC, they stopped being independent in football, too. But anyway, a lot of this stuff went on. Army and Navy, they've gone back and forth being in conferences and not conferences and independent. But all their other teams are in conferences. And Air Force was not. They were in the WAC, but that was a regional thing. You know, a lot of schools around them in the Mountain West now, essentially, that conference has become, even though it's not a direct descendant of it. But anyway, it made sense a little bit. But Army and Navy are more national in scope. And just like Notre Dame is the last real remaining independent of any standing. But they're in the ACC for everything else, and they're actually contractually obligated to play a certain amount of ACC teams now in their football season. Well, they're actually, I think, in the Big Ten in hockey. They had a tilt in the Hockey East for a while, but the regional thing worked better for them in the Big Ten. So the whole point being is that these sports that you play more than once a week, they should be regional in nature just for the sheer convenience of it. I mean, we're calling them student athletes for crying out loud, and I don't know that they are anymore necessarily. I think they're athletes first, students second or third, but the fiction, the facade that these universities and the NCAA and all this stuff are peddling is that they're student athletes, and they call them that. All their, you know, public commercials, the public whatever you call it, the PSAs, public service announcements they have in all the ball games, they make sure to call them student athletes. Well, it's a bunch of baloney, frankly. And knowing a lot of student athletes in my day, a long time ago, academics had something to do with it, certainly. But a lot of especially the football and basketball guys, that's why they're at school. And they wouldn't have been at school had it not been for sports, most of them. So we got to keep that in mind. But this is kind of the stuff that everybody's been talking about, or at least some people have an opinion on. One thing I have not heard an opinion on yet is that these schools now, institutions, whatever you want to call them, I call them schools in quotes, but why? Just call them schools for the sake of argument. Why in the world, after getting these giant multi-million dollar payoffs to go to these different conferences for sports, which is essentially funding their athletic departments and getting them fans and new students and this, that, and the other, why in the world are these public universities anyway? Why are they taking any tax money whatsoever? This is an affront to the taxpayers of the individual states or municipalities they're funded by, because they don't need it, but they take it anyway. And let's be honest, a lot of these big-time schools that have big-time football programs, a lot of the students go there for the football or basketball or whatever it might be, because that's a big part of the collegiate experience, as far as I'm concerned anyway. I made my decision ultimately to go to college just because, like, a lot of the schools I was choosing between, they didn't really have a big time basketball or football program that I could go watch and be a fan of every weekend and then into my adulthood. So Boston College is where I went. I could have gone to some smaller schools without football program or without a Division I program. Maybe wanted to play. I don't know. I mean, I threw it around. I probably wouldn't have ended up doing that anyway, anywhere. But I like to go to the games. I like college football. I mean, as far as a team sport goes, spectator sport, it's probably my favorite sport still to this day. I mean, it's hard saying. I mean, I love the game of baseball and understand it a lot better than any other game. But I like baseball at all levels. But if I'm just choosing one particular sport, it's college football's right up there with Major League Baseball and both institutions, whether it's NCAA football or Major League Baseball, they've really screwed the pooch over the last few years. NFL, a little bit. And I love the NFL, but I think, well, I like the game of football more than, I don't even play fantasy sports, but fantasy sports and the gambling stuff is driving the popularity of football, because I think without it, you wouldn't see a whole lot of fans of the game, or at least as it is right now, and having the availability to watch all the games is really cool. But same thing goes with college football. You can watch pretty much any game. And one of the neat things of college football is you had to really, you know, each game that your team or a team you wanted to watch, if they were on TV, that was a big deal back years ago. And it's not a big deal now. If I miss a game, I can watch it on a recording. Frankly, I can get a recording of pretty much any game too, if I want to do that. If you want to do that, you probably can find pretty easily. So my point is, why are these public so-called universities taking any money whatsoever from the state? And they take a lot, I mean, huge funding. And that brings me to another idea I have. I haven't really articulated it ever, but why are these schools, so-called University of Oregon, say University of Washington? It's a big deal down here in California, all the UC, University of California systems. There's at least two separate tracks for the universities to be on. It's a University of California system. You know, you got Berkeley, UCLA, UC San Diego, UC Davis, and so on and so forth, UC Santa Cruz. And then there's the state system, Cal State, whatever, Cal State Fullerton, Cal State Fresno, Fresno State, San Jose State. You know, you go on down the line. They're San Diego State. They're easier to get into, the Cal States. Their reputation isn't as high as the UC schools, so-called. But it's hard for a kid with perfect grades and perfect tests or close to perfect test scores to get in to the UC schools if they're from California, which is nuts. It happened in our family. Like, I don't know how many UC schools he applied to, but he got rejected from every single one. Perfect grades, near perfect SATs, and no dice. He's now at University of Michigan, which is, by all accounts, they called it Harvard of the West at one point. I don't know if they still do. But it's a much more prestigious university, I think, than any of those other schools that I mentioned. Perhaps not. I don't know enough about it, nor do I care. But it just seems that, all right, well, that's odd. First choice would be go to one of these California schools and can't get in, live in California. But you get kids coming in from out of state, and they pay more, and the state still takes the money from us, the taxpayer, to fund their schools. Meanwhile, children, young adults from that state can't get in ahead of young women and men from other states or other countries, probably because they're paying full freight. University of Oregon is the same way. A lot of people from California and people from Oregon, the state of Oregon, will get rejected from the university or applying from the university before some of these. And I would probably argue that it's these out-of-state schools, they look probably at zip codes where these folks can pay full boat on tuition, where they don't have to subsidize any of it, but they still take the subsidy. This is the crazy part of it. They'll still take the subsidy either way. And it makes no sense. But tying all that back in to the football, and the new conference realignments and stuff, these schools have, just to enter into these agreements, have taken tens of millions of dollars from these conferences based on TV money. And who knows, that may be drying up sooner rather than later. It's hard to tell. People are as jaded about sports and the way they're going now as I am, and been a lifetime fan, near half century of being a fan of these sports. Who's going to watch? Children don't. They have a lot more stuff to do and to watch on TV than I did as a child. And I sought out sports anytime I could watch. And I certainly wasn't the typical consumer. And we never had a Nielsen box in our house, as far as I know. But, you know, we watched a lot of sports on our TV when I was growing up. And I watch a lot of sports for a lot of years. And I just don't do it that much anymore. I really don't. And you've been with me for a while on this show and previous show we had, Sportlander is a podcast, which we started right in the middle of the COVID hysteria talking about sports, because I love it. I love sports, and I had faith that things would come back to normal soon, and has still not happened, and we're 3.5 years into the whole thing. And, you know, I have to say before I go today that, you know, I think it's one of these things that people are like, just get over it. Get over the, you know, thing. We had a pandemic, and things changed. It's like, well, I get it. I don't know that I would classify it as a pandemic. Some doctors do, some won't. It was a pandemic of hysteria, by and large, and I'll stick to that, more so than pandemic of death, and more evidence is coming out on that every day. But the point being is that you can't just get over it. These people ruined lives by sticking to the narrative that we had to shut down society, shut down sports, social distancing, being 6 feet apart or some arbitrary, whatever, 3 or 6, I forget now, but whatever, all the stupid circles you had to stand on, or else, you know, you're going to infect somebody with death. I mean, it was foolish then. It's even more foolish thinking back on it now. And I'm not just going to get over it. And I don't think you should either, because it's not worth getting over. It's worth remembering that they can do this to you. And essentially, they've killed the culture. The culture was not heading in a particularly strong direction before this. I say, and you heard me say, and I mean, probably even at the beginning of the show, serious content amidst an unserious culture. It's an unserious culture becoming more unserious every day. But it's our job as normal people, people who follow me and people who I follow, to reclaim it. I don't know what that's going to look like. And that's part of what I've been thinking about here for the last month or something like that. Or I don't know what it is, what direction or what steps I know the direction I want to go. I don't know the action steps I need to take to get it back. And I know that I can't be just one voice squawking in the millions of squawking back the other way. That's just not going to work either. But I would like sports to take the lead. I think they've been terrible. Golf was really quite awful at the beginning of this whole thing. Inherently social distance sport that shut down for months. They've been better lately, but they act like it's just part of the deal. And it wasn't part of any deal that any of us agreed to. And I don't really want, I don't like talking about it a whole lot. I say this podcast is therapy for me in many ways, and I believe that. But I get to talk about it and get it off my chest because I don't think that we're reminded of it enough. And maybe that's part of the point of this podcast, or me coming back on the podcast. Wasn't really where I was going when I first started or intended on the show. But now thinking about it, it's important that we stay vigilant in making this society and culture that we grew up in more serious than it is now. And if you're just going to take the company line on all this garbage, these people aren't bright. I remember a great movie, which I don't necessarily agree with the tenets, but I think it's a wonderful movie and one of my favorite movies of all time. It's called All the President's Men with Robert Redford and Dustin Hoffman. They played Woodward and Bernstein of the Watergate fame, which, again, I've talked about Richard Nixon on this program before, much maligned. And I was listening to another podcast today. There's another fella, and I'll see if I can link to it. But he's coming out with a book on Richard Nixon and essentially like trying to reclaim his legacy to some degree, because he's been painted with a rather unsavory brush. And I mean, you just look at Joseph Robinette Biden Jr. and Donald J. Trump and Bill Clinton, Barack Obama, and all these people. And what in the world did a prank gone wrong? And Richard Nixon tried to do a little bit of cover-up, but the cover-ups and the scandal today in today's America is just absurd. And you like really dive into it, and for what Watergate was and what we're going through now with the whole Biden thing, I mean, just crazy. But not my point. My point being is that in this movie, All the President's Men, you know, the character of Deep Throat, which turned out to be Mark Felt, former deputy director of the CIA, total coward. But the character played by Hal Holbrook was great, and probably nothing like Mark Felt, or none of the things actually happened, like actually did happen or alleged to have happened between Woodward and quote-unquote Deep Throat. But he said about the Nixon administration in particular, I remember him smoking a cigarette in the parking garage. He's, these aren't bright guys. And they're not. They're not bright guys. But they're running your lives. They're running my life, essentially. And we take them at their word, because that's the way this culture used to be, by and large. And we could, you know, even if they were wrong, I mean, people would occasionally apologize for at least later in life. But no, that ain't happening. Not with these people. And I don't think the answer is to vote better. That ship sailed a long time ago. I mean, I've tried it. It doesn't work. One man, one vote doesn't mean anything. Not worth a hill of beans. So I guess that being said, it's incredibly frustrating to be where we are. But I'm glad to be back on the podcast, glad to be podcasting. And just remember, if you've been here at least this long, well, you can probably go over to briandoleary.com, sign up for the O'Leary Letter, which comes out most every day. This podcast will hopefully be coming out several times a week. Fits and starts, but it's coming back. People have been irritating me. Not irritating me, but it's like, come on, dude. When are you coming back? Well, I'm back now. And also my emails are there. And we got a couple other projects in the mix. Like I said, I'm going to leak it out over the next several weeks or months what exactly I got up my sleeve. And hopefully it's good. Hopefully it works out. But, you know, sometimes best laid plans, they go to waste. But anyway, glad to be back. And go to briandoleary.com. Chat with you soon.